That's where you see programs fail. That's where you see missions where they don't accelerate. And that's not what you want to do. You want to be able to support and accelerate those dreams. And by doing that, you need really strong compliance.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your organization's spend without buying an ERP, but we are not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've started to realize over the last sort of 12 months the important role that fund accounting can play, actually often for our customers, and it's an area where I've been trying to find the best expert I possibly could to come on and explain this topic, especially if you're from a commercial background or maybe even a startup background. This may be something that you haven't considered before, but we're going to learn today about how fund accounting can be a very useful bow to have to your quiver, or quiver to have to your bow, when it comes to building your organization. So you don't need to be mission driven necessarily, and we're going to find out all about it today. To do that, I've got a second interviewee from Birkeland to come on the show, Angela Satterfield Sexton. Angela, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe you could kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
Hi, I'm so grateful to be here today and talk to you. So a lot of people don't know that I've been starting my bucket list, and I love to paddleboard. We have Bottomless Lakes is about 13 miles away from here, so I'm from Roswell, New Mexico, which is, yes, the alien city. And no, I haven't seen any aliens.
Well, the strangest thing about that is I don't know much about Roswell, but it's a long way from the coast. So how do you go paddleboarding if there's, where do you find your sea?
Absolutely. So we're in the middle of the desert, and about 13 miles out is Bottomless Lakes, which is absolutely beautiful. And my husband and I like to go out there and just paddle around. There's turtles, and we like to go and explore the different species and just learn to, live life. And New Mexico has so many beautiful outdoor adventurous places that growing up, I really haven't adventured and got out to sea. And now that I've gotten older, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to go and do my bucket list. All of these things are right here. They're accessible. There's no reason not to enjoy. So I don't know. I feel like paddleboarding is a lot like granite counting. You kind of have to balance the waves and navigate life. And granite counting is very complex. So I would like to dive in and talk to you about that some more.
Very good. Well, I love bucket lists. I have my own bucket list written up on the wall here, actually. And you don't have to be. Why be old until you have enough bucket list? You can be young like us and get going straight away. I have a bucket list with my kids. My personal one is, by the time they're 15, we have to have 10 awesome holidays together. So we've been to Japan last year, and we're going to try and make, 10 holiday. We've been to Costa Rica, and each year we have to try and think of a better one. So bucket lists, I'm all in favor of. That planning muscle I can see is getting used already, because that's something you're thinking about as an accountant, I guess.
Absolutely. You have to find the fun outside of the box. Sometimes, the accounting world is very gray, and I'm not your typical accountant, as you will find out.
Yeah, I'm a programmer. I feel like I'm a cousin, in professionally, because we both get a bad rap in terms of exciting. But I've certainly found that accountants' life can be almost too exciting sometimes. It depends what they get into. Well, maybe you have some examples of some of the scrapes that accountants can get onto later on in the show. You never know. So
Absolutely.
Maybe you could, before we kick off, tell us a bit about how did you get into this specific niche? How did you start off in your career, and what led you into the wonderful world of fund accounting?
Sure. So I started my career, I earned my bachelor's in accounting at Western New Mexico University, which is in Silver City, New Mexico. And I later obtained my MBA from Capella University, which I did last year in my 40s, as I was talking about my bucket list. That was something I started and I wanted to wrap up, and I finally did wrap up. So my first 10 years of my career, I worked as, most of us do, as we start off in the accounting world and doing tax returns and into various, you know, public accounting. I dove into tax and I got buried into books and loved it. And I learned various different industries during that time. However, then I started in Roswell, New Mexico, volunteering for boards and volunteering for different organizations. And when you're good in at accounting, you start to get pulled towards these little nonprofits and organizations that need help. So I ended up finding this mid-sized nonprofit that was growing and was in need of an accountant. And so I started off as a finance director, and this organization started with 13 employees, a budget of 600,000. We grew this organization. I grew into a CFO for this organization of 53 employees and a budget of over 4 million, which comprised of 25 different programs, which were all different funding sources. And so this is all grant accounting related. So it's federal, state, philanthropic, foundational, individual grants. And we grew this organization based off of these type of funding. And all of these fundings have to have very strict compliance requirements to adhere to, which makes it tricky.
Very good. So I'd like to just ask about how this world works for people who aren't familiar with it. So in a traditional organization, a commercial organization, if you like, you're marketing, you're looking for customers, you're getting customers, you have sales team. But what you described wasn't that much, it sounded a little bit similar in that there was a constant need to continually apply for grants to keep the organization going. It wasn't like the government were just saying, here, for the next 20 years, you're good. It sort of they introduced this competitiveness by providing, which sounds like a kind of a social service in a way, something you could argue the government need to provide, and then you have to compete to be able to do that for on behalf of the, did you feel like you were working on behalf of the government, or were you really in service of your clients? You know, what how did you what's your mindset there?
For the nonprofit that I represented, I felt like the government advocated for our service that we were representing. We were representing abused and neglected children. And I felt like the government was, but it was a fight. Like you have to, like you said, you have to apply for those funds. It's not given to you if you don't have good rapport, if you don't have good compliance, if you don't have all these ducks in a row, you know, they don't really give you consideration. And it is a struggle. You know, you have to constantly apply, and you are constantly, as we see with the climate right now, at risk of losing that funding as well.
I mean, in that application process, what's the biggest contribution that the finance team makes? I guess you have a grant writer who's doing this constantly, but what does the finance team bring to those applications in order to win the funding?
Absolutely. There's so much detail that in place. And I mean, it's everywhere from pre-award to mid-award to post-award. There's so many details that you really have to be aligned in. It's not just like in the pre-application process. So if before you even apply, there's different compliances that you have to make sure that you adhere to. You have to make sure you have your policies. You have to make sure you have your accounting system if you're using QuickBooks. If you're a lot of these compliance requirements require a lot of time on the back office. A lot of nonprofits don't have the time to support that in the back office, so they need to know like what tools to utilize. What can I do to make this faster on my team? A lot of times they don't have the infrastructure to support that team. And that's where like somewhere like where I work at Berkland, and I'm in grant accounting there. And I love it because we get to help these startups sit there and kind of direct them. Okay, you need to get your policies in place. We need to get your chart of accounts online. We need to make sure that your indirect costs are aligned with your mission. You know, we need to make sure that all your ducks are in a row before you even apply. So it is quite technical. There are quite a few steps before even applying that you really should consider. You know, it's not something that I would just like dive right into and say, hey, here we go now, what's next? You know, that's usually where you see the scramble. That's where you see programs fail. That's where you see like missions, you know, where they don't accelerate. And that's not what you want to do. You want to be able to support and accelerate those dreams. And by doing that, you need really strong compliance.
Okay, well, we're going to get into the how startups may use this, but you've highlighted an area straight away, which is, you know, startups typically don't have revenue to start off with. A lot of NGOs or, charities don't have revenue per se, and they need this funding to be able to keep them going. So straight away, the accounting team becomes not a profit center, let's say, a very important part in the capitalization and the running of the organization, actually bringing that money in. Sales team won't do it for you. You need to have the right finance structure with the who know how to work with the funding that's available. Can you tell us a little bit about, what you've seen people do wrong? So there are, I guess there's websites where you can go and apply, and anyone kind of can go start applying for these things. But how do people get into trouble by just sort of YOLOing it, if you like? What do you need to get right before you start?
Sure. A lot of times, for one, people don't have the right accounting system in place. They don't have QuickBooks. They don't have accurate timesheets. One of the biggest things with the federal government, and really it's any grant on any level, is timesheets. For some reason, and I think it really is because if you look at what is funded, most of the percentage that's funded is actually personnel, if you ever look at like what is actually funded. And so whenever you really go in and dissect that, they want those timesheets. They want to be able to track that, Joe Blow spent X amount of hours on this project, and that's what the government is paying for. Then that, and that is where I have seen nightmares. You can have a nonprofit, for example, that, a person could be serving and acting with several different people through different funding sources, for example, all day long. But how do you track that time? And how do you sit there and translate that to like a social worker's brain or like someone that's not financially sound that like, hey, I have to account for my 30 minutes of doing what? Like, it's hard to translate to people that are not financially minded, that are not minded like us, to really break it down.
Well, let's be honest, no one loves timesheets. That's the God's honest truth. Now, I will get into maybe your strategies for operationalizing that, because they need to learn to do it. Otherwise, it's not gonna work. But I can imagine you have people out in the field doing what they're supposed to do. The last thing they want to think about is spreadsheets. But just, you mentioned QuickBooks there. I want to cover off on that. So is that basically in QuickBooks, they have a class feature. So is it basically using that class to put each one is a grant number? Is that it? So every line item has to have a grant number?
Absolutely. In grant accounting, it's a little bit more granular than just, regular accounting. So every transaction that is tied to the grant has to be class coded. And so if you're receiving money from DOE, or if you're spending, or you're traveling, every item needs to be tagged. And that's why I say, like QuickBooks, for example, there's other systems that are out there, but QuickBooks is one of the, number one, that's probably the most popular, and also integrates well with most other banking institutions, credit cards, and such. But there's also tools that we've used like Rex, which is amazing. So you can like tag an exact expense. Okay, I worked on this project. And whenever you go to pull in your grant accounting into QuickBooks and you pull your P&L by class, those transactions are going to sync up into QuickBooks and it's going to align.
Great. Let's talk about the tools then. So Brex, very popular. I think it's $20 billion company now, absolutely killing it at the moment. So you issue people with, let's say they make purchases, you issue them with Brex cards. And then as they're making the purchases, they're asked to code it there and then. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. And you can actually capture those receipts. Receipts are another big, huge thing with grant accounting. Mm. Everything with the federal government, they want a receipt for everything. And so Brex is one of those things. Instead of having your program people like chase down receipts, it's automatically captured. That's less time on you. It's less time on the program people kind of like chasing down programmatically. It just kind of like it wraps up all the compliance.
Right.
Another thing that I've learned in the past is like our HRIS systems, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but like Rippling and Gusto, those two I've utilized greatly as well. And Gusto, so like they handle all of our benefits and the HRIS system. And so whenever that integrates into payroll, you can also sit there and either if you want to use Gusto, you can use Gusto. There's also tools like Rippling you can use, and you can class code your employees And then you have to integrate that into QuickBooks as well.
Okay. And how about allocating a large expense, and you do you have to split it across multiple projects, or let's say last year's grant and this year's grant? How do you might have some money left over from last year and you want to use it this year? Is that Can you do that sort of thing, or do you have to be careful about when it's spent as well as, the code it's going against?
Absolutely. So that's one of the challenges with grant accounting is there's those fun little timelines on when the money has to be expended. And so that can be a challenge with cash flow with any organization because you might get awarded a ton of money, but without a really good strategic plan and cash flow, you can't expend. One story that I wanted to tell you as my CFO time, the mid-sized nonprofit that I was talking about, we had a month to spend $1 million, which was crazy. But if you can just picture our cash flow for a mid-sized nonprofit wasn't the greatest. And since we were in really good standing with State of New Mexico and CYFD, they loved our program and they knew that we were doing good work. Well, they don't want to sit there and return money on the table. And so they had assessed every other state agency. And they had about $1 million on the table. And they reached out to us and they said, can you expend this in a month? And of course, my CEO boss was a dreamer at the time and was like, yes, we can do this. And we ended up doing it. And so it created a finance nightmare because sometimes, you receive this money and it sounds all great and wonderful, but $1 million to expend in a month is a lot. And especially if you don't have the cash flow and the means, we were fortunate enough to do it and get reimbursed in a timely manner. But it was crazy. We bought an RV for at-risk youth, which was really cool, and a coffee truck, which it was used to be a job for at-risk youth to learn how to do job skills and such. And then also, we stockpiled on a lot of supplies that were needed for the families in the community, but it was a crazy time.
Very good. So you touched on something there, which is, it sounds like Brewster's Millions, by the way. I don't know if you've seen that movie in the 80s, this guy who had to, spend, I think, $10 million in a month or something. And I love that movie. But it's the important thing when the cash comes out. So you mentioned you can, stockpile or build up your stocks. Or I know sometimes my wife's company, they do explainer videos, and every now and again they'll have a charity says, listen, I'm not ready to make a video now, but I want to put it on deposit with you so that they can make those videos later on. Is that skirting the rules somewhat? Is it important that the cash, is it all about when the cash leaves your account, or is it when the value is delivered that's important from the grant's perspective?
So for the grant perspective, both, you want to make sure that you receive those goods or those services are performed and as well as paid for by that time. Most of the time, it's like a 6:30, a cutoff is typically for nonprofits, and a lot of the grant state awards end at that time. Federal awards are also in September 30th. So usually it's a scramble those two times of the year, depending on what your funding sources are to expend and deliver the service. So a lot of people say, okay, at the end, I need to sit there and spend this kind of money. Well, you need to make sure that you actually receive those goods. You actually need to make sure that whatever service is performed. Also, another thing that people try to do are pre-register for trips and register for conferences and whatnot with monies at the end of the year. I've seen it go both ways. It really depends on the agency if it's like a required grant seminars or something that's required for the grant. Sometimes it's allowable if it crosses those times, but it's all about that relationship with that contract officer sometimes and if they do approve that or not.
Very good. So what the image I'm getting here is actually spending the money is the hard part. Like, okay, getting the money is hard, but also getting the money out on time. I was speaking just before this call with my partner, and we work with a organization in New York State, and they provide housing for people. And a challenge that they have is that if they spend like a stick of gum against the wrong code, they can lose an entire grant. It could be a $1 million grant or a $10 million grant. And if they just buy a stick of gum and put it against that when they shouldn't have, that's it, ground could be gone. So they end up actually sometimes just eating the cost for things that maybe they shouldn't do because they're not sure if it's going to get passed, you know, that particular grant, that grant officer. In that case, it might come down to that. Is that something you see, or have you seen any instances where people have lost their funding because they haven't coded things correctly?
I haven't seen, in my experience, I haven't seen funding loss. I've heard, of course, in the accounting community, you follow articles and you see, you know, disasters all the time. But as far as what you're talking about, coding the wrong little thing is very something that you see all the time. And that's one of the things you have to make sure that you really understand what the allowables and unallowables of that grant are, or you're going to end up eating cost. I saw when we first started off at the nonprofit that I worked for, you know, you don't quite, when you're starting going, understand those allowables. And whenever you're talking to like team members that are young, that a lot of nonprofits have are uneducated, you know, you have to educate the staff as far as what are allowable, what's not allowable. Can I sit there and take these kids to do this activity? What activity per this grant can I do? What can't I do? There's just so many details. And I'm talking about social services, but a lot of the clients that I've seen at Brookland, you know, they're dealing with more federal grants, more technical, more like NSF, DOE. They're dealing with more on the allowables if, you know, this is allowed equipment or not allowed equipment, if this supply is allowed by this grant, if this supply is not. So it gets more technical, more granular, because you have to really identify if that piece of equipment or supply is part of the award or not. But grants can get just crazy. You know, it can go from services to like science and equipment stuff. You know, I've just like seen it all. It's just interesting.
So it's difficult to get the money. It's difficult to spend the money, and it's not over, right? So then there's the audit, and there's the dreaded federal audit, I guess, is the one that everyone's trying to avoid, or you can tell me. What do you do? What's your experience with these audits? What have you learned in order to help them go well that you didn't know at the beginning?
Yeah, so from my experience, you know, every nonprofit, every agency should have an audit every year. And if you don't, then you should probably get one. But that's just my opinion. But as far as the individual audits for grants and the DCAA audit, if you've ever experienced one or heard about one, they are more technical than your annual audit. So when I'm saying technical, I mean, they're looking at you in a fine-tooth comb. And so you want to make sure all your I's are dotted and all your T's are crossed. They're looking at your policies, your HR files. You want to make sure those human resource files are up to date. And I mean, it's very granular. And when you have a compliance audit, they're really looking at your books. You know, they're looking at you if you have segregation of duties. They're looking at all those kind of fun stuff. Whenever you have a desk audit, they're tearing apart your timesheets. They're making sure that Joe Blow said on that day that 5 hours were recorded to NSF, that 3 hours were recorded to this funding. You know, they're looking that they actually performed those duties on that day. And how do you know that? So it's a different audit that most others aren't experienced with. And sometimes you don't know what they're going to ask or look for. They could focus on different areas.
Sounds a little bit intimidating, to say the least, right? So you need someone on your team who's used to doing this. So you mentioned Brookland. So Brookland, you know, has a long history as a Series B, C startup world, as far as I know, you know, fairly in the Bay Area with a lot of high-tech startups, etc. And you've come to work with them. Not necessarily two things I would have put together, you know, the world of VC and grant funding. So how come why did Brookland need you to come on board, and how have you now transitioned into helping startups with their funding journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So Brookland, like you said, they mainly are into startups, and they've now ventured in the small business field, which is amazing, but they are more focused in there, and they didn't have anyone that specialized in grants. We have a clean energy and a nonprofit sector, which really had a need for a grant accounting controller. So basically these companies they had opportunities to apply for these federal, state, foundational grants, and they need the support for them. And so the demand was there, and there's more and more of a need that clients were seeing that they were having these federal grants, and they just need someone that had the eyes and ears to sit there and have the experience to with the funding allocations and the indirect costs and be able to really pay attention to what these clients need.
So in traditional VC, people cut the checks, they move on, they're doing the next thing, etc. But it's a very different culture, I guess, when it comes to then taking government money. So what are the types of startups that, you know, are listening to this and may be eligible for funding, a funding source they hadn't considered before? You've mentioned green tech, maybe. What other types of startups are you working with at Birkeland today?
Oh, there's various different startups. It's very exciting. We have very different industries in the clean energy sector and nonprofits and just different various industries just starting up. I've gotten to help people on that have NSF, DOE, USDA, all kinds of different grants. So it's pretty amazing, from anywhere from SaaS to agriculture to all kinds. It's just, my mind has been blown. Been really interesting.
Wow, cool. I wouldn't have expected SaaS. I would have thought it would have all been capital expenditure.
So some of this is very new to me from coming from like the social work background. And, you know, I've also worked with other nonprofits. And I would say like grant accounting is all the same, but it's all different. Like it's all depending on the mission, but it's all like the same language, I guess, the same accounting language.
Very good. So if you're listening to this, who should reach out to you and how could they reach out to you if they feel like, hey, hold on, maybe I could benefit from some of your expertise, Angela?
Sure. So you can reach out to me or my lead directly, Elizabeth Black at eblack@birklandassociates.com, or my email address is Angela Sexton or asexton@birklandassociates.com. We also have a sales director. Her name is DJ Marini, and she would be the best person to probably talk to. Her email is dmarini@birklandassociates.com.
Great. Thanks very much for this. Thanks for that, Angela. Really enjoyed talking about this topic. And thank you for listening to the podcast. If you've got this far into the podcast, congratulations. As you know, Angela, you may not know, I'd like to give the people who've made it all the way to the end something special. So what I'm going to give them today is an opportunity to join our newsletter. Now, why would that be special for anyone? Well, what I've learned is that actually over the last couple of weeks, we've started to collect, let's call them financial mishaps, learnings, things that we can learn from the recent news, and we put them in our newsletter so that we can all benefit from them. Typically, they're examples of how people have not had the right financial controls in place, which has led them into tricky spots. So we've had, for example, Naomi Campbell ended up in her newsletter because she wasn't administering her charity with the right level of control. And we have some of these stories, let's be honest, it's a little bit vicarious. Learning how people's other mistakes, there's a little bit of fun involved, but we can also learn from it at the same time, as well as you get updates on our podcasts like this. And then finally, we started running masterminds. If you're in the grant-funded industry, we run now monthly grant for grant managers. We run a mastermind session. We had one last night, which was a big success. And it allows you to come along and meet your peers from different sectors, all grant managers, and share challenges that you're working on. So for any of those three reasons, I'd recommend your newsletter at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. And that's it. Thanks very much, Angela. I've enjoyed the chat.
Thank you, James. I enjoyed chatting with you today.